Our second lesson comes from Mark 12, 13 through 17. Then they sent to him some Pharisees and some Herodians to trap him in what he said. And they came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and you show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" But knowing their hypocrisy, he said to them, "Why are you putting me to the test? Bring me a denarius and let me see it." And they brought him one. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Jesus said to them, "Give to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were utterly amazed at him. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Good morning. Let's see. So, we as Christians, we have a weird relationship with God. Heck, we have a weird relationship with Jesus, right? Both of them. Both are supposed to be somewhere at the center of what we are, what our faith is. Jesus at the very center, and then the Bible is sort of pointing us to Jesus, kind of like a GPS to Jesus, right? So we can find our way back, find him in the first place, or navigate somewhere near Jesus, because let's face it, sometimes we don't want to get that close. I mean, like much of the rest of the human race, parts of Jesus and the Bible that make us sound good, we tend to like those parts, and we like to make them, and the ones that make us sound bad, we want to kind of avoid that neighborhood, right? Get not quite over there. Well, there's a technical theological term for this, and it's buffet theology. There's a huge spread, you know, lots of food, and if you want your sesame chicken, well, then you take some of that. But if you don't want the sweet and sour sauce, you just kind of leave that over there, right? And maybe you like the spicy parts there. You put the Mongolian beef and you just pile it high. You want some noodles, some rice. That's completely your choice, right? So when it comes to theology, here's how that looks like. You need some comfort? Well, let's read some of those books, right? Some of those things. You want to change the world? Let's emphasize God's kingdom here on earth. You don't want to feel bad about yourself? Well, then let's just skip the parts about sin. We don't need those, right? And you read the passages that talk about how bad other people are when we want to feel superior. So how did we get from the buffet? How did we get to the buffet from the vineyard? Well, today's parable talked about that, you know, the little short stories Jesus likes to tell to kind of point the way, teach us how the essential truths about our faith work with us, get us to think about our faith a little differently. And so the parable today, well, that's about a vineyard. There's this man who makes a vineyard, and he takes his time. He puts care into the property, invests some money, makes a wine pit, makes a watchtower so we can watch over it, put some fence around, and then he leaves for another country after renting it off to some tenants. And then when the time comes to send this, he sends a servant to collect his share, you know, the rent. Same thing, you know. "Hey, what you got?" And that's kind of how things are supposed to work, and then we just think everything's going to be just fine. But then, as is often the case, the story takes this little change. See, we expect it to be simple, straightforward. He's going to come, knock on the door, and we're going to get produce, money, whatever it is, that's going to be their rent for the property that was given to them to care for. Sort of, you know, fulfilling that contract. But what happens is when they knock on the door, yeah, they're sent away empty-handed. And so the owner sends someone else to collect the debt, someone who is, you know, maybe a little higher up. This time they beat him, they call him names, and they send him away. So he sends somebody else, and they kill him. And then the interesting part, many, many more are sent, and every one of them are beaten, ridiculed, killed. So finally the man says, hey, you know what, I'll send my son, because surely they will respect him. And instead, the people who are renting the property go, it's the only son. So if we kill him, there is no heir. Then all we have to do is outlast him. We get the property, and it's ours. And so that's what they do. They kill that son. Jesus closes the parable by describing what the landowner is going to do. He's going to come and he's going to destroy the tenants, completely wipe them out, and he's going to give the vineyards to someone else. And then he quotes, as he often does, one of the Psalms. Psalm 118, he quotes, "The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is amazing in our eyes." Now, the chief priests, the scribes, they were sharp. They figured out, he's talking about us. We better get him, right? But they couldn't, because they were afraid of what the crowd would do. They were afraid of public sentiment, and so they kind of left to come up with plans on how they could do it around them. And see, this parable is often interpreted as the Jewish people, or the people of antiquity, having been having had many chances to accept God as their Lord. Prophets from old, right? Come out, they've said, hey, come to God. He's coming. Come to God. And they keep turning them away. They keep killing them. They keep putting them off. And then it's finishing with the violent rebellion against God's rule by putting Jesus to death at the hands of Rome. And it makes the Jews the bad guys. And that's the narrative of salvation. And it gives us today, sometimes, a feeling to justify that anti-Semitism that we hear about that floats through our society. It's been used to make Christians feel superior to every other religious group. Because, hey, we didn't reject Cornerstone, right? We didn't reject Jesus. We're the followers of Jesus. That seems like an obvious read, doesn't it? Because we are the ones. Hey, we picked it up and we built it. But reading it today as though it was written for us, for these followers of God, perhaps it reads a little differently. And here's a little hint, because God, he sees all. He knows all. So he can easily write for all times in his scripture. So we should always read the scriptures with our own today in mind, especially the New Testament. See, that's the power. It can't stay in one place. So if the vineyard owner that he constructed, this great vineyard, made this beautiful garden for everybody to use, remember another garden in the Bible? Perhaps a little tie even to the Old Testament. So we've got this productive world. We don't need to make it great again. It's already here because God gave it to us. And if it's written for us today, and we're the religious leaders, and we go to the town square in Marion, and Jesus is there, well, that reads a little differently. That means that maybe we're the people who are rejecting the cornerstone if Jesus was there today. Are we uncomfortable yet? When we've neglected any covenants that we have made with God, marriage vows, baptismal vows, confirmation vows, have we broken any commandments? Have we failed to love our neighbors as ourselves, failed to keep any of those other vows that we made before God? Uncomfortable yet? I know I am. Have we ever held on to stuff rather than giving it to God? Give him what's left instead of his portion first? Uncomfortable. Have we ever used violence to stop God's will of brotherly and neighborly love? Had might made right? Stood at a schoolhouse door to stop the integration of schools? Used power to silence the voice of others? Fear to travel through the airwaves to make everybody afraid of being anywhere near each other? Uncomfortable yet? There's some things that have happened this week, I think. When's economic justice been far from our minds? Hey, I've got mine. I got a lot of toilet paper over here. I can make sure that I make it, right? It's all fine if the market's fine. Doesn't matter that minimum wage didn't keep up. Pfft, somebody else's problem, not mine. Keep our mind on that low cost in the pocket. Hey, the gas prices have dropped. That's awesome. How about the pharmaceutical prices? Yeah, that's okay. Somebody has to choose between food and staying alive and healthy. Uncomfortable yet? How about when we take a child from the only structure they know, the only unit, a sister, a brother, a mother, a father, an aunt, an uncle, and we separate them out and put them in little concrete areas? Are we uncomfortable? Because I believe we should be. Because if our theology is just buffet, we can skip this meal, right? We don't need to worry about these uncomfortable truths. If we don't like it, doesn't agree with us, then we don't have to follow it. I think that this parable is also meant for us today. If it makes us uncomfortable, then maybe that's important, because God does not live in comfort. He lives in those uncomfortable places as well as in the joyous ones. The question for us here and now is, are we going to walk away afraid of public sentiment when standing in the square with Jesus and somebody says or does something that we know is incorrect, and we just walk away? We let it happen. You don't have to go hunting for a place where something goes on. You could be at a grocery store and see something that is incorrect, and then you say something. You see it, you say it. That is God's way. That is what we do. That is what we have to do. That is what we are called to do. It's not, let's go down to the border and do whatever needs to be done there or go here. It is us. One on one, because when two are together in my name, I will be there. So if you are there and someone else is there and you make that statement, that little statement, that is a moment. That is a moment between you and God and Jesus. This whole book is about us. And it isn't always complimentary. We are not always nice people. I am not always a nice person. I can tell you that. I try. I fight. But I'm not. But if we are going to take credit for being the cornerstone of the church, whenever we stand up for what is right, what is what Jesus taught us to do, then we have to take the blame when we deny it and we move away from it. That is what today's lesson is about. So what's on your plate? Are you willing to let God fill your plate to overflowing? to God alone be the glory.